Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam. Today we're beginning chapter 22 of the fourth canto. This is Prithu Maharaj's meeting with the four Kumaras. Today text numbers 1 and 2. 2 is on the board. Text 1 has no purport. Translation. I'm going to read the translation to text 1 and then to text 2 and then read the purport. This is text 1. The great sage Maitreya said, while the citizens were thus praying to the most powerful king Prithu, the four Kumaras, who were as bright as the sun, arrived on the spot. Text 2. Seeing the glowing effulgence of the four Kumaras, the masters of all mystic power, the king and his associates could recognize them as they descended from the sky. You can say after me, seeing the glowing effulgence of the four Kumaras. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The four Kumaras are described herein as Siddheshwaran, which means masters of all mystic power. One who has attained perfection in yoga practice immediately becomes master of the eight mystic perfections, to become smaller than the smallest, to become lighter than the lightest, to become bigger than the biggest, to achieve anything one desires, to control everything, etc. These four Kumaras, as Siddheshwaras, had achieved all the yogic perfectional achievements, and as such, they could travel in outer space without machines. While they were coming to Maharaj Prithu from other planets, they did not come by airplane, but personally. In other words, these four Kumaras were also spacemen who could travel in space without machines. The residents of the planet known as Siddhalok can travel in outer space from one planet to another without vehicles. However, the special power of the Kumaras mentioned herewith is that whatever place they went to would immediately become sinless. During the reign of Maharaj Prithu, everything on the surface of this globe was sinless, and therefore the Kumaras decided to see the king. Ordinarily, they do not go to any planet which is sinful. So the translation again, I'll read the two texts. The great sage Maitreya said, while the citizens were thus praying to the most powerful king Prithu, the four Kumaras, who were as bright as the sun, arrived on the spot. Seeing the glowing effulgence of the four Kumaras, the masters of all mystic power, the king and his associates could recognize them as they descended from the sky. So they arrived at the spot, and the spot happens to be in the midst of the sacrificial arena, whereas the yajamana, the patron of the sacrifice, Prithu, is dressed in a deer skin with a ring of kusha grass around his wrist and so on, because he's engaging in a ritualistic, proper ritualistic activities for the sacrifice. So they descend in the midst of this sacrificial arena. So you can just imagine a big arena, sort of like I sort of think of them like a football stadium nowadays, but instead of the lions and the tigers or whoever they're battling it out, there's a sacrificial field there. So then coming down from the sky, very bright, later they're effulgent, and This is described later on when they sit down together. He offers them seats, and they're sitting four in a row. They look just like little fires, sacrificial fires, one next to each other because of their effulgence. So they descend like this out of the sky. So Prabhupada explains here, first of all, of course, they're described as Siddheshwaran. They're the Siddha. Here means perfection. So specifically, the reference is to the mystic perfections that are gained by practice of yoga. These are mentioned here. One of them is that one can travel through space without any vehicle. So they have this. They're the Ishwaras, they're the controllers of these siddhas. So they can do this. So no wonder, you know, there's not, the earth doesn't shake and some big spaceship come down with a lot of special effects. They just descend very quietly without polluting the atmosphere, shattering everybody's eardrums or whatever. And but then Prabhupada said, but that's not so much. After all, is that the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, they also can do this. They can travel from outer space. They're born with all these eight perfections. So Prabhupada is pointing out that of those powers, these powers that they have are not, they're common, actually. They're common powers. But he says, however, the special power of the Kumara is mentioned. So here the uncommon siddha, the uncommon power, better than their mystic power, lokan apapan kurmanan, that wherever they go, that place becomes sinless. They can make that place sinless. And then there's something interesting, the way Prabhupada handles this. He says, whatever place they went would immediately become sinless. And then he says, during the reign of Maharaj Prithu, everything on the surface of this globe was sinless, and therefore the Kumaras decided to see the king. Ordinarily, they do not go to any planet which is sinful. So this is their special power, that they can make a place sinless, but they're not attracted to go to sinful places anyway. So already it was sinless. And so therefore the sinless beings come. So as it says, to those that have it shall be given. This is in the Bible. Sometimes this is the case, that because already everything was so nice under Maharaj Prithu, virtually sinless, so therefore they got benediction of the association of the Kumaras. Well, there are better things, higher things than just being sinless also. That's just the beginning, after all. So this is not that their appearance is redundant in any way. No, they're also going to give some very nice instructions, because sinlessness is just the that's just the beginning. Want to become more than sinless, we want to become perfect servants of Krishna. So this is the benediction. But that power was there to attract the Kumaras into the arena of sacrifice. So this is all these stories are here for our instruction. Now, earlier on in the Bhagavatam, it was mentioned specifically by Lord Vishnu, who had earlier also appeared, in the 20th chapter, at text 15, this appearance of the Kumaras was predicted. So I'll read that text. Lord Vishnu continued, "My dear King Prithu, if you continue to protect the citizens according to the instructions of the learned Brahmana authorities as they are received by the disciplic succession, by hearing from master to disciple. And if you follow the religious principles laid down by them, without attachment to ideas manufactured by mental concoction, then every one of your citizens will be happy and will love you, and very soon you will be able to see such already liberated personalities as the four Kumaras, Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanandana, and Sunat Kumar. And here they're called Siddhan, perfected personality, same word, Siddhan. So this is the instructions or the mention of the qualifications of Maharaj Prithu, which brought about the appearance of the Kumaras. So two things: to protect the citizens according to the instructions of the learned Brahmana authorities as heard in disciplic succession, and follow the religious principles laid down by them without any mental concoction added to it, then your citizens will be happy and love you, and the four you'll be able to see the four Kumaras. So then later on in his reign, this actually took place, thus illustrating that Prithu Maharaj followed all these things very, very carefully. Now, what Prabhupada, the first line in the purport that Prabhupada says here is, Lord Vishnu advised King Prithu that everyone should follow the principles of Varnashrama Dharma. So this is his, this is what he means, to protect the citizens according to the instructions of learned Brahmana. This means you protect them in terms of Varnashrama Dharma. So these are his specific qualifications. So here's the result. Now, what this means for us today is that whatever was achieved at that time by Maharaj Prithu, these are instructions meant for us, and the same consequences will be there. So, first of all, we notice that how Maharaj Prithu ruled his kingdom and what he was doing. So it's significant that the four Kumaras appeared in the arena of sacrifice. So this is how the kingdom of the Maharaj Prithu was organized. It was organized for the performance of sacrifice. That has to be there. Otherwise, all hell will break loose. This has already been described in the Bhagavad Gita. So the sacrifice, this has to be performed. That's given. That's right from the very beginning. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna instructs this in the instructions on Karma Yoga. Says that in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu. So here's what happens. Here's creation. So who's coming out? There are demigods, there's human beings, and there's sacrifices. So, in other words, the whole system is given. Not just human beings are created, but the demigods, that is, will be later explained, the different controllers of the departments of the universe, they're sent forth, and also sacrifices, they come out. And it says that Prajapati blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. In other words, all your material and your spiritual needs will be met by performance of sacrifice. Now, do we believe the Bhagavad Gita, don't we? Now, I'm assuming that in this audience, almost everybody accepts the Bhagavad Gita, at least in principle. So this, if we accept this, then here this is a very interesting piece of knowledge. In fact, it's a solution to everything that everyone's worried about, because they're worried about two things. They're worried about their spiritual well-being and they're worried about their material well-being. And here we say that the person who set up the whole machinery for life in this world set up a system by which the spiritual material well-being can be taken care of. This is sacrifice. It comes out there right at the beginning. In the original Big Bang, there's what they think is the Big Bang. There's sacrifice for Vishnu. It's already there. Unknown higher ordered laws or something like that. So this is some information that Krishna's given us. You can get everything that you need. And Prabhupada says in the purport, he explains this quite clearly, the Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajna, sacrifices, for the satisfaction of Vishnu, so that while in the material world they can live very comfortably without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. There it is. That's the whole program. That's what Prabhupada said. That is the whole program for the conditioned soul. By performance of yajna, the conditioned soul gradually becomes Krishna conscious and becomes godly in all respects. And then Prabhupada, okay, so here's we need guidance, right? This is because Maharaj Prithu was told that you're performing here. So here's something coming down. He says that you should protect the citizens according to the instructions of the learned Brahmana authorities as they are received in disciplic succession. So that means they're coming down telling us from disciplic succession. So here it is. Here's Krishna, the original authority. So he's saying to us, this is what you need to get everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. This is sacrifice. And then this is the whole program for the conditioned soul, performance of yajna. So now we're receiving this. The purport is there by Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada has stated particularly about his books that they're the law books for the next 10,000 years. This is an interesting statement that he refers to them as law books. Because there are many, many things in his books, but he refers to them as law books. Law book in Sanskrit, the Sanskrit word for law book is Dharma Shastra. That is particularly concerned to teach us with Dharma. And in the purport here to the, going back to the text 15 of 20th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada comments on the word in that text, the Dvijagra, the foremost brahmanas. There's a specific purpose in mentioning here when the one should follow the Dvijagriyas, the most prominent brahmanas like Parashara and Manu. In other words, those are authors of Dharma Shastra, particularly, that these are what should be followed in terms of Dharma. So Prabhupada's books are, particularly for us, they're Dharma Shastras. They're instructing us in our different dharmas, Varnashrama Dharma, Bhagavad Dharma. So you may read Bhagavad Gita and people may say, wow, well, you know, how do I apply this? I mean, here's, you know, these yajnas coming out from the very beginning and this, what is a yajna? What do you do? So here, now following Prabhupada, as we have to do so, just like King Prithu is following, so we have to follow in the silly succession. So now Prabhupada points out for our benefit, continues to discuss the notion of yajna. He says, in the age of Kali, the Sankirtan yajna, the chanting of the names of God, is recommended by the Vedic scriptures. And this transcendental system was introduced by Lord Chaitanya for the deliverance of all men in this age. Sankirtana yajna and Krishna consciousness go well together. Lord Krishna in his devotional form as Lord Chaitanya is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32 as follows, with special reference to the Sankirtan yajna: Krishna Varnam Krishna Tvishna Tvisha Krishnam Sangopangasta Parishadam Yajnai Sankirtana Prayar Yajanti He Sumedasa. In this age of Kali, people who are endowed with sufficient intelligence will worship the Lord who is accompanied by his associates by performance of Sankirtan Yajna. Other yajnas prescribed in Vedic literatures are not easy to perform in this age of Kali, but the Sankirtan Yajna is easy and sublime for all purposes, as recommended in Bhagavad Gita also. 9.14. So here it is. Be thou happy by this yajna. So what is the yajna? Well, there's a different sacrifice for different ages. In this age, Sankirtan Yajna, as pointed out by the authorities in the disciplic succession. So we have to follow, and just like Prithu, we have to receive. So listen to what he told him, or again. If you continue to protect the citizens according to the instructions of the learned Brahmana authorities, as they are received by the disciplic succession by hearing from master to disciple, and if you follow the religious principles laid down by them without attachment to ideas manufactured by mental concoction, then every one of your citizens will be happy and will love you, and very soon you will be able to see such already liberated personalities as the four Kumaras. So therefore, here's the instruction. We have to follow this instruction to perform Sankirtan Yajna as given here without attachment to ideas manufactured by mental concoction. That's given here especially. And then, it says in the next verse, prosperity will reign for all. Because everyone will become pleased, the demigods will become pleased, the devotees become released from sin, and so on. So this is the prescription, how to do things. So we have to follow, we have to organize ourselves for performing this sacrifice. If we do not lead the life of sacrifice, says later on, that person who doesn't lead a life of sacrifice is called Indriya Aramaha. He's engaged in satisfying himself through sense gratification. His life is full of sin. One who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin, living only for the satisfaction of the senses. Such a person lives in vain. Mogham. His life is useless. So we don't want to lead useless lives. So that means sacrifice. The word sacrifice, actually, the actual literal meaning of the word sacrifice is to make sacred. The two Latin words meaning to make something sacred. And that principle of sacrifice, it's already been described later on in the fourth chapter. Where this making sacred process is given, that in the sacrifice, everything becomes united with the Supreme. the offering, that which is offered, the fire of sacrifice, the performer, the arranger of the performance, they all become Brahman. They all become spiritual. And Prabhupada describes sacrifice, therefore, or Krishna consciousness, which is the life of sacrifice, as the life of changing the illusory consciousness into Brahman. So then the second thing, the second connotation of the word sacrifice, it means to give something up, something valuable, and to give it up. So sacrifice, and it has the connotation of not being selfish. The life that is led in vain is the selfish life, where one lives only for his own satisfaction. But when one lives a life of sacrifice, one takes valuable things and gives them up. And one lives for the sake of others. That is the life of sacrifice. To make sacred and to live for others. So that is a useful life, that you make yourself holy or sacred, and then you make others sacred. Actually, the matter becomes spiritualized or re-spiritualized by the performance of sacrifice, and therefore you make everything sacred. And so that actually anyone who's fully engaged in the performance of sacrifice sanctifies himself, his associates, and finally, everything, just like the four Kumaras, wherever they go, it becomes, all sins become removed. They become removed like that. So, this is our sacrifice, Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy names, and congregationally broadcasting the glories of the Lord. This is the Sankirtan Yajna. And the life, the way that Maharaj Prithu organized things, was he organized his kingdom for the satisfaction of, for the performance of sacrifices, so that Vishnu was satisfied. So that's also described here, how this is done, how sacrifices comes. It says, here's a, there's a chain of dependent production. All living bodies subsist on food grains. So we start right away with the basic problem. How do we live? Well, they live, where does a living body come from? Well, it comes down to food grains. Either you eat grains directly, or others, they eat beings that eat grains, but it comes down to they're eating food grains. So where do these grains come from? They come from the rain. Oh, so where does the rain come from? He says, that comes from sacrifice. If you want regulated rainfall that produces grains, because for grains to be produced, rainfall has to be regulated. Not only the right amount, but at the right time. Because you have to make hay while the sun shines. If it rains at the wrong time, it spoils your crop. A regulated rainfall. So where does that come from? It says, yajna is born of prescribed duties. And what is this word, prescribed duties? It's karma. That's the word, karma. Also, where do prescribed duties come from? From the Vedas. Oh, so those, that karma, my prescribed duty, what are the prescribed duties, therefore, that produce yajna, that are the karma that's given in the Vedas? What is that? That's varnashrama dharma. Those prescribed duties, prescribed in the Vedas. And the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's the chain. So for that sacrifice to be performed, therefore, human life has to be regulated according to prescribed duties as they are enjoined in the Dharma Shastras. So, we have to now organize ourselves for the performance of sacrifice. And as I see things today, this means we have to look again at our Sankirtan and see how we're going to go on increasing the Sankirtan Yajna, performing the Sankirtan Yajna, and engaging more and more people in the performance of Sankirtan Yajna. And we have to organize ourselves properly for that. Because, and then when everything is organized, then everyone will be happy, personalities like the four Kumars will appear in our midst. There won't be any problem for that. Because this is Kali Yuga, that doesn't mean that none of these things can happen. Well, they can happen because we're under the special mercy or special auspices of Lord Chaitanya. So actually easier now than before, for that matter, if we simply take advantage of what has been handed down to us by Lord Chaitanya through Srila Prabhupada. All instructions are there how to perform a sacrifice. In Prabhupada's books, we have to have, first of all, this absolute conviction. In Prabhupada's books, and really nowhere else, is everything we need to know for living happily in this life and for going back to Godhead. That in Prabhupada's books, there's all solutions to our spiritual and material problems. And if we have spiritual and material problems, then we have to go to Prabhupada's books for the solution for those things and not anywhere else. We have to learn how to perform this Sankirtan Yajna according to the way Prabhupada did it. And it's what I see that is the necessary step for continuing the Sankirtan Yajna is the organization of ourselves in terms of the roles set forward in the Varnashrama Dharma as given by Srila Prabhupada in practically every page of his books. It's there for a reason. Prabhupada talked about Varnashrama Dharma over and over and over again for a purpose. And then as he was preparing to leave the planet, he said that 50% of my work is finished. What a heavy statement that is, that he had not completed his work. The other 50% is the establishment of Varnashram Dharma. And then he set off for Gitanagari to do it. It's not... he didn't make it to Gitanagari, but what that means is he left us a very heavy message. Do this next. So we have to accept like that. And it seems to me our collective task now at the beginning of this year and all through this year is the revisioning of Sankirtan, especially in terms of Varnashrama Dharma. What does Sankirtan mean? And I've been thinking about this a lot. How do we perform this sacrifice? It means that, of course, that within the movement, people have specialized roles. There are brahmanas who direct the performance of sacrifice and who do the actual sacrificial acts. These are, for example, in terms of Varnashrama Dharma, in terms of Sankirtan Yajna, especially preachers. Those who preach Krishna consciousness and teach Krishna consciousness should be qualified in terms of brahminical standards. In other words, and this means that we can't say, well, I'm a preacher, therefore I'm a brahmana. No, it should be, I'm a brahmana, therefore I'm a preacher. In other words, one who is a preacher of Krishna consciousness, it is important that we see that the qualifications of one who not that preaching has to be a specialized act, because we're all Vaishnavas, and therefore each of us in our own way should be preachers of Krishna consciousness. But if we're going to organize in terms of Varnashrama Dharma, then there are going to be some specialists who this will be their full-time specialized engagement over and above anything else. You just like you organize, for example, take the United States Marine Corps. There are certain people who are frontline riflemen, and that's their specialized duties. There are other people that have other duties as in support of those frontline riflemen. They're medics, for example. They're communications people. They're engineers, you know, blow up bridges and make them. They're combat engineers, signal corps, medics, crooks, so on, all these different people. But according to at least the doctrine is, everybody knows how to fight. But there are those who are, that's their specialty. So we have specialized people that are preachers of Krishna consciousness. So what are the preachers? One wants to be a preacher of Krishna consciousness. This is my goal in life. Then I must become qualified. What is a qualification? Sama, Dhamma, Tapa, Socha, Shantam, Arjavam, Jnana, Vijnanam, Astikyam. And then I have to start cultivating these qualities very, very, very intensely. So then there are others who will help, who will organize, because any coordinated effort requires organizing. There's others who will produce the wealth, the money, to fuel this. Every organization requires cash to run. And there are those that will assist the others. But whatever position is, it's all, the whole business is Sankirtan Yajna. And we have to see ourselves in terms of this. So this has to be the way things are organized, and that's why we have to become expert at our area of specialization, and in that way we all can prosecute the Sankirtan Yajna very, very effectively. We have different facilities. We have a temple. What is a temple? What is its role in the Sankirtan Yajna? What are the people who live in the temple? What are those role? What is the role of those who live outside the temple? How do we distribute Srila Prabhupada's books? How do we use public space to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books? Like that. One thing that I've noticed is that if we start looking at our preaching in terms of Varnashrama Dharma, then we start, because Varnashrama Dharma, it means that there's room for everybody. It means that in our system there's room for everybody. Because people will be, whatever, if someone has any attraction for Krishna whatsoever, no matter how faint, attraction enough to keep them coming back to the temple once a month, then they're in our system. There's room for us in our system. And we have to say, these are our people. Anyone who's regularly coming to a temple, what we call a congregation, or what we call sometimes called fringes or whatever, they're not. These are our people. And we have to accept them. We have to bring them in. Because I think in the past we've had a different attitude. There we get a Sunday feast and it's crowded with people. And we're looking, where is the person that's going to move into the temple? We decide this person may move in the temple, that, and then we just tolerate everybody else. And then we think, well, they come to eat. We just tolerate them. No, these are our people. We should think, why should anybody move into a temple? Maybe not. Maybe that's not even required. What is a temple? Who are the people that live in there? Maybe not everyone or very few need to move into the temple. But my conception is that we could preach very successfully for several years and then greatly expand the Sankirtan movement and not have anybody move into the temple. I could see that. So anyway, we have to take these books, these Dharma Shastras that Prabhupada has given, and perform the Sankirtan Yajna. We have to organize it, and the system is, that's already given, how we should be organized. The Varnashrama Dharma system is the system for the proper utilization of resources. Natural resources and human resources. So that should be organized. So one should inquire. We should start to inquire, what is my varna? What is my ashram? We already think we have ashrams, but that's a mistake. Even that thinking, because Prabhupada said in Mayapur that you can't have ashrams until you have varnas. But we have to look. We accept Prabhupada's books as Dharma Shastra. So I'm wearing white or I'm wearing saffron. So I look at my color. Well, I'm wearing saffron. I guess that means I'm a brahmachari. So then we look and we see, what is that brahmachari dharma? What does it say? We study it together. What does it say? We collect every information. We talk to those people who have been with Srila Prabhupada. We find out, what does he say? What is brahmachari dharma? And then if we want to do what Maharaj Prithu is doing, or the Maharaj Prithus in our movement, and they say, okay, now we must come up to this standard. This is the standard. We all accept these books. These are our Dharma Shastras. Now let us live up to this Dharma Shastra. So we establish the standards. Well, say I'm a preacher of Krishna consciousness. It's been my engagement for so many years. So what is a preacher? So I look and I say, well, in terms of Varnashrama Dharma, preacher means Brahmana. So now I look and see, well, what are the Brahminical qualities? Well, we say Arjavam, truthfulness, for example. And then I've heard Prabhupada quoted said, a Brahmana is someone who never tells a lie, even in jest. So then I have to inspect myself. Am I truthful? Am I a truthful person? Am I truthful to myself? Am I truthful to others? And the second important qualification is cleanliness. Am I clean? And then you start to look at what are Prabhupada's instructions on being clean. What does that mean? And then I follow. And then if I start to try to follow these things and it's a bit too much for me, or maybe a lot too much for me, then I'm thinking, well, maybe that's not the service I belong in. Maybe I should be playing another role. Just like if I actually start to follow Brahmacharya Dharma and it just starts to drive me crazy, when I actually follow it, then of course there's another place, there's Grihastha. So now I'm going to be a Grihastha.
Now, what does that mean? Well, that means I have to maintain a family. Well, how do I maintain my family? Well, that depends. What are you Brahmana? Are you Kshatriya? Vaishya? Shudra? Which role are you going to perform? Of course, through all these things, one should be a Vaishnava. That's the important thing. There's no shame at all or disgrace if my role is that of a Shudra. Everybody's afraid that when you start talking Varnashram Dharma, somebody's going to come along and say, "You are a Shudra." Well, so was Ramananda Roy. There's a lot of Shudras that we should be so fortunate ever to even be able to touch their feet. There's no shame at all in being a Shudra. You should be more afraid of being a Vaishnava. Then that's a worry. Somebody's more worried about whether he's a Brahmin or a Shudra, and not so much worried whether he's a Vaishnava or not. So there's something wrong with the sense of values.
Here, free from mental concoction, without attachment to any mental concoction, without attachment to ideas manufactured by mental concoction. So let us please not think we are very bright. We have Kali Yuga brains ground out to mincemeat in America, leavened with a huge dose of drugs, usually in our early years. And don't think that we have any brains. But here it's coming down. These are big, big brains. Krishna's a big brain. And here people have been fortunate enough to listen to Krishna and transmit to what Krishna has said. So let's not be, you know, so bright to think that we can come up with some manufactured... Well, let's apply it. What Krishna has given, what Prabhupada has transmitted to us. And this way we can perform Sankirtan Yajna, sacralize the world, to make everything sacred and holy. Everyone become happy. We won't live lives in vain, but rather become fulfilled because we're living our lives for the sake of others, not for our own selfish interest. And so we'll become satisfied. Krishna becomes satisfied. We live well in this life and go back to Godhead and have the association of the four Kumaras or people on that same level. And that's what's being offered to us by Srila Prabhupada. We should have the intelligence to take it up. So I'll stop there. Murli Vodica's hand is in the air already.
You were saying that your premise in the beginning was that everyone's accepting Srila Prabhupada's books and that this is a Dharma Shastra. So when you said that the next 10,000 years, I thought maybe I could just read one very short thing from Prabhupada's books. This is the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, 10th chapter. This is text number 51. Lord Ramachandra became king during Treta Yuga. But because of his good government, the age was like Satya Yuga. Everyone was religious and completely happy. Purport. Among the four yugas, Satya, Treta, Dvapara, and Kali, Kali Yuga is the worst. But if the process of Varnashram Dharma is introduced, even in this age of Kali, the situation of Satya Yuga can be invoked. The Hare Krishna movement, or Krishna consciousness movement, is meant for this purpose.
Boss.
That needs no comment, but I'm going to comment on it anyway. it is interesting, a little earlier on in Prabhupada's book, sometimes he'll make the statement that Varnashram Dharma is not possible in Kali Yuga. But you see, later on, Prabhupada begins to make more and more statements like this one. If you can introduce Varnashram Dharma in Kali Yuga, it will become like Satya Yuga. So he wants this. And then all those things that are possible in Satya Yuga will be possible in Kali Yuga. I mean, I believe this as far out as it is. I believe it. I believe whatever Prabhupada says. Once you accept that you believe whatever Prabhupada says, there's a whole big burden of anxiety lifted from you. Yes, Prabhu?
Yeah, you were talking about specialized services Isn't it, though, that in the Krishna consciousness movement, more or less everyone should be a preacher, not that the special... Well,
Krishna, didn't I say that?
I thought you said that said some that. Specialized...
I said that.
I thought you said that the specialized service, were, that some would be preachers.
Some will be preachers, but everybody, just I use the example of the Marine Corps. Did you miss that?
No, not that.
Okay, so everybody in the Marine Corps is a rifleman, but they still have their specialized service, but there's some people that are just riflemen and nothing more. Right. So there are some people, the Brahmana class, who in order to have full-time facility to full-time preach and really get into it, then they do not have to, for example, earn their money.
But that doesn't mean that a sudra can't be a preacher.
No, I really tried to go out of my way, I thought, to say that a sudra can be a preacher if he's a Vaishnava.
Right.
Yeah. I hope that's clear.
I think from the same sample, a sudra can be a preacher in some environment when the people are in certain level of intellectual and social environment that he can communicate easily. I think preaching depends where are you preaching,
right.
Who are you preaching, and which circumstance you are preaching. Because sometimes only with your model and with your sample is a preacher way. I'd say maybe it's in a university, you need a people with certain intellectual background to interact in more dialectic and positive way that only says, this is what Prabhupada says in Peter. You need more resource for
sure.
Dialectic process.
Sure. Sure, that's right.
Murli? Prabhupada addressed the point that Hershey Prabhu raised in one of the Varnashram walks in Vrindavan, where he was pointing out the construction of a building and explaining that that construction of a building is also preaching, and that the preaching has to be seen in a very, very broad sense. The real preacher, he also, in some dialogue with Harisara Prabhu, he made the point very clear that the preacher is Srila Prabhupada, and the preaching that we do is assisting Srila Prabhupada. He has the vision, he was especially empowered and sent to preach in Kali Yuga. So the degree to which we assist his preaching, that's our preaching. And the assisting of the preaching, and Prabhupada was making this point in Vrindavan, may take many forms other than just the direct rifleman duty of contacting the conditioned soul. But still, that's not to say it's not preaching.
Yeah, there's different ways. So if any service you do, if it's in the service of the Sankirtan movement, is Sankirtan, and is also preaching, doesn't mean that you don't get the same spiritual benefit as a person who is directly face-to-face talking to people. But if you're doing your service, you also have the opportunity to directly say, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, and surrender to Him. Nobody's going to say, don't do that. Nobody's going to say that.
Sure. You had mentioned how if one aspires to be a preacher, then you should tend to cultivate the numerical quality. Now, in the introduction to Sita Subramanian's The Point of Qualities of a Devotee, he describes how these qualities, there isn't so much of a need for one can't develop them, in other words, outside of the process of Krishna consciousness. I think the impression I got from the introduction was that he said that kind of it would automatically develop within the devotee, but they were more or less, we could use them as kind of milestones in gauging our development in Krishna consciousness. What I'm wondering is, it seems like there's kind of two ways that you can view that. Yeah, we should cultivate, but that they'll automatically develop. Whereas if we're relying on an automatic development of these qualities, these numerical qualities, then they may not happen.
Well, if you look at the kind of qualities, say, that are brahminical qualities, many of those you have to cultivate. Cleanliness, for example. You have to, it's something you do. Either you take a bath 3 times a day, either you wipe your spot after you eat or you don't. or after you sleep. Either you're clean or you're not clean. And if you're clean, it's because you do it. So cleaning is something you try to be. Jnana means knowledge of Prabhupada's books. So either you try to study Prabhupada's books or you don't. Now, if you're illiterate, that knowledge will also arise within your heart. That's a fact. But if you're going to, if this is going to be your specialization, first of all, the fact is that those qualities should be more prominent in such a person anyway. They should be the ones that a person naturally has by his conditioning under the three modes of material nature. There should be an inclination in that direction. So if that inclination is already there and the propensity is already there, then to cultivate a propensity is an entirely natural thing. To cultivate other ones that may not come natural. If you're of that brahminical propensity, there's no sense in trying to cultivate Ishwara Bhava. That's really a hard road to hoe for you. But if you're a person that already has Ishwara Bhava, then you would naturally learn how to use that and develop it. So that's how that would work, at least in terms of Varnashram Dharma. That you're working on something that's already there by psychophysical conditioning. Yes?
You're talking about we have conceptions of different ashrams, but the roles really haven't been defined so much. So I'm just wondering if there are devotees that are studying, what the roles should actually be.
Yes.
And how they can be brought about.
Yeah, we got a research project going to really collect. Dattatreya is working on it as research. We've got all of Prabhupada's letters. We've got Prabhupada's books. Try to compile. This is like a zonal project. What are the ashram dharmas for the different ashramas according to what's in Prabhupada's books and his instructions? Then what to do then? Seems to me the way to go about it is the different groups meet together. If we've had one brahmachari meeting here in Philadelphia, householders meet and we understand and we come to an agreement. This is what Prabhupada says, based on the premise that we all accept Prabhupada's books. Then we come to an agreement about what Prabhupada says. If Prabhupada says one thing's here but seems to say the other here, then we analyze and discuss until we kindly come to a consensus. This is what Prabhupada says. Then we look and we see how far is what we are actually doing, how far is that different from what we're supposed to be doing? And then we bring reality into conformance with the standard. Some people are going to have problems. Everybody's going to have some problem with this or that aspect on it. But we get together and we work it out. We help each other out. Somebody has difficulty with this or somebody has difficulty with that. And then we work it out. Because you understand, if you're in this ashram and in this varna, then you have to follow the dharma. It's no mental concoction. Let's keep it to a minimum anyway. And let's try to see how little mental concoction we can get in under the rubric of time, place, and circumstance, adaptation, Kali Yugas, this, that. This you need experience. If once having understood what is meant by, say, brahmachari ashram, you don't want to be a brahmachari, fine, then there's householder ashram. That has its duties and its responsibilities. But you can't pick and choose. Well, I'll take this from the brahmachari, this from the householder, and I'll put it together in my own little package. That's not allowed. It's given to us, God-given system, created by Krishna. So let's accept it and do it. And then my total conviction, is that if we do this, we'll be following Prabhupada's orders, we'll be pleased, and we'll see the whole Sankirtan movement go on with a huge amount of renewed energy and wealth. I think we have to stop here because it's already past 9 o'clock and there's a schedule we're going to follow today. But we should keep talking about these things and so many interesting things will come to light. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Love in this room again.